So Far from the Bamboo Grove by Yoko Kawashima Watkins. Chapter 1. It was almost midnight on July 29, 1945, when my mother, my eldest sister Ko, and I, carrying as many of our belongings as we could on our backs, fled our home in its bamboo grove, our friends, and our town, Nanam, in northern Korea forever. In darkness, Mother checked windows and doors. I was 11, Ko 16. I was very tired, and my head was so dizzy I did not know which way I was heading. The cool night air swept my face. Still, my head was not clear. I saw Mother close the main entrance and lock it. "Now give me your wrist, little one," she commanded in a low voice. I was called little one by my parents and Ko, but my older brother, Hideo, always teasing, called me noisy one, because I often screamed when I was teased and when we frolicked in the house. My wrist? I hadn't had a night's sleep in 2 weeks because of the air raids. My head was very hazy. "Hurry!" Mother found my wrist in the darkness. She was tying a rope to it, so I don't lose you. Tying Ko's wrist, she asked, her voice full of worry, "You did leave a note for your father?" "Yes, Mother." "I left a note for Hideo," said Mother. "Oh, I hope he finds it and joins us. He can get in through his window. Now remember, no one knows we are leaving. No matter what, until we reach the train station, be silent. Understand?" "Yes," Ko said again. I wanted to cry. Though we lived in northeastern Korea, we were Japanese. My country, Japan, which I had never seen, had been fighting America and Britain for 4 years. Because Father was a Japanese government official working in Manchuria, I had grown up in this ancient town. We were 50 miles from the Manchurian border, and we were so close to the Russian ports, Vladivostok and Naroka, across the sea from our harbor. Father came home by train as often as he could. The shadow of war had been creeping across our peaceful village for months. The most horrible shock had come some weeks before. Mother and I were alone, and I was practicing my brush writing before going to my teacher's house for a calligraphy lesson. Calligraphy is dipping a fat or thin brush in India ink and writing in script or in the square style of Chinese characters. I had finished my final copy when 4 Japanese army police burst in through the main door of our house, which only invited guests used, without taking off their shoes. A mean-looking policeman told Mother, "We are here to collect metal, iron, bronze, silver, and gold." Mother stood, bewildered, and he yelled at her. She gave him Father's treasured silver ashtray set. He threw it in a box and demanded more. Mother brought her bronze flower vase that stood in the konoma, where flowers were always elegantly arranged. She began to pull the lovely arrangements of irises out one by one, and the policeman pushed her, yanked out the irises and leaves, and dumped the vase and heavy metal frog inside into the box. Mother's eyes were fixed on that box, but she was silent. The head one noticed Mother's wedding ring, and he demanded that. Then her spectacles, gold-rimmed, though she told him she could see nothing without them. They went into the box. Finally, the head police picked up the Mount Fuji paperweight holding my calligraphy copy. That paperweight had been sent to me by my father's mother. She said it had been passed on to my father from a way back, and she could still see my father, when young, using it to practice brush writing. Through this Mount Fuji paperweight, I dreamed of seeing the majestic mountain and imagined the beauty of my homeland. He glanced at my writing, "Bu'un Choi Kyu, good luck in war," then left the sheet and tossed the paperweight into the box. I had stood there, helpless, fists clenched, seething, and the iron weight smashing Mother's important lenses released my fury. I jumped at the head policeman's hand and bit it as hard as I could. He yelled, but I bit harder. He shook me off, pushed Mother away, and made her fall. Then he threw me on the floor and kicked my side and back with heavy army boots that had hard soles with metal cleats. My head went dark. Somewhere in the dark space, I heard Mother's anguished cry, "Leave! Leave!" When I awoke, Hideo, Ko, Mother, and Dr. Yamada were around me. The doctor was a friend of Father's who always treated his patients with a smile, but not this time. He gave me a shot. Mother was putting a cold towel on my back. Every time I took a deep breath, my chest and side pained, and the doctor said I might have cracked ribs. He looked at me through his half glasses. "No more frolicking, no more crossing the stream. You stay home until I say all right." He turned to Mother. "I will call my optometrist friend, and he will prescribe lenses for you." "This is absolutely inexcusable of the military," he said angrily. "The government must be desperate for supplies to make ammunition. Telephone me if a thing like this happens again." His bald head was shining against the late afternoon sun, and in spite of my misery, I remembered what he had said to Father once when he came to the New Year's party, that he must invent a solution to grow black, wavy hair. I was glad I did not have to go to school the next day. For a long time, school had been changing. We studied for only 3 periods, and the male teachers were wearing army uniforms. Women and girls had to wear the national clothes by order of Japanese Prime Minister Tojo, khaki pants gathered at the ankles, simply designed long-sleeved blouses. For part of our school day, we would do labor service for the army, collecting empty cans or going to the ammunition squadron to sort flawed bullets from large boxes, wearing stiff army gloves. I hated that work. Mother often said she did not like killing, and I felt I was helping the army kill people, even though they were our enemies. Whenever Father came home, he and Hideo worked digging a shelter in the thicket large enough for the whole family to crawl into. "Why, Father?" I asked. "Just in case of an air raid. It's wartime." He sent Ko and me to find tall, thin bamboo shoots and tie strings around bundles of them to make a cover for the shelter. He also told us to pack emergency rucksacks with rice, dried fish, a mess kit, some changes of clothing, and a blanket each. He said these should be left at the main entrance so that if a raid came, we could each grab our own and run to the shelter. For herself, Mother prepared a huge double wrapping cloth. Besides emergency items, she put in important papers such as our health records, insurance policies, and even report cards from school. I saw her sewing on her cloth. "What are you doing, Mother?" "I am making pockets." "What for?" "For various things." The pupils began digging ditches around the school in case an air raid came and we had no time to get home. I was given a shovel, but the handle was much taller than I and heavy. I could not dig that hard, rocky ground. I huffed and puffed, just wrestling with the shovel. We learned which siren was an alert and which was an all clear. We were digging when our first air raid alarm came. The alert siren burst out. Our teacher, Mr. Enomoto, shouted, ordering everyone to flatten on the ground. I heard engines roaring over my head. I had never seen an airplane, but when I looked up, I saw clearly American planes in formations of 3 flying over us. Mr. Enomoto yelled at me to put my head down. His scream was angry and frightening. My heart raced, and face down, I breathed heavily, my breath scattering the dirt around my mouth. When the all-clear sounded, I wanted to go home, but we continued to dig. When I did get home, I was exhausted, and I could not concentrate on my calligraphy lesson. My hands were still shaking from handling the shovel, and I could not hold the brush steady. My first air raid experience, and Father was not home. I felt very insecure. Even with the war upon us, my parents insisted that I continue with all my special lessons, not only calligraphy, but the way of tea, an art of serving and receiving tea, flower arrangement, poetry writing and reading, and Japanese classic dance lessons. After that first air raid, I asked Mother if I might be excused from all the extra lessons from now on and just be at home with her. "You mean to quit?" she asked. "I'm not talented in any of my lessons. Besides, I am so tired." "Your being talented or not doesn't matter," said Mother. "This learning will be useful someday, and the lessons help polish your mind. As for being tired, just go to bed early." I thought back to the terrible news that had come from our homeland in April. The last school bell of the day had rung on a warm, sleepy afternoon. We all stood and bowed to Mr. Enomoto, and he returned the bow. He reminded us of our cleaning assignments. Then, pale and serious, he broke the news. "I am sorry to tell you, but American bombers have attacked Tokyo, and the city is demolished. How many of you have relatives in that city?" A few classmates raised their hands. "I am sorry," Mr. Enomoto said, looking at each one in turn. "The noon news was that almost all of the people are dead. Tokyo is a billow of fire." Children began sobbing. I felt terrible for them, but I was relieved that my grandparents lived in northern Japan. I wanted to get home fast to be with Mother. How I wished we did not have those cleaning assignments, but my group, 10 of us, had to clean the first graders' classroom and their toilets as usual. As soon as the cleaning was over, I dashed outdoors. I took a shortcut home. As I ran down the grassy bank, sparrows rose suddenly and flew away into the high, deep blue sky, humming as they went. The tributary of the Tumen River ran swiftly, bouncing around large rocks and leaving sparkling beads. I took off my shoes and stockings and stuffed them in my pockets. I walked in the shallow stream of the river, then straight into the bamboo grove and ran all the way home. "Mother, Tokyo is demolished," I cried. My family, unlike most in Nanam, had a radio. I know, Mother's shoulders drooped. "I only hope the fighting will not spread to us." She sighed deeply. "I've just heard that the army has established another division at the foot of Kyojo Hill. That was only a mile from us. Also, the Imperial Navy is docking warships and ration, 30 miles away. And," she went on reporting, "the army has taken farming land from the Koreans by force to expand the army hospital. Little one, the Koreans have established a group they call the Anti-Japanese Communist Army. The Koreans were part of the Japanese Empire, but they hated the Japanese and were not happy about the war." "It's terrifying," Mother said. Then she changed the subject away from war. Your performing day at the hospital is tomorrow. Why don't you practice before supper? I was one of the children who had been chosen to perform for the wounded soldiers at the Army hospital. Dancing lessons were something Father had decided Ko and I should take, and I detested them. I had to give up playtime. My unwillingness showed in the many mistakes I made in steps or in lifting my leg when I should not, or skipping a turn. The teacher, Mr. Fukui, sang the difficult notes of the music, his voice quivering high and low as his freshly shaven head wiggled up and down. A khaki-colored army truck with a big red cross on the hood came to get our instruments and costumes the next day. Mr. Fukui and Hideo went with the truck, and Mother, Ko, and I followed in a taxi amid clouds of dust. The military base was off-limits to civilians, and I was curious. We were halted at the gate by army police, then waved on. We came to a huge white building where Major Ryu, an army doctor, greeted us. He said all the wounded soldiers had been looking forward to this day. There were other children backstage in a giant auditorium, here to show their talents in singing, poetry reading, and koto playing. While I was changing into my kimono costume, I began to hear people entering the auditorium, and I peeked through the heavy curtains. Wounded soldiers wearing white hospital gowns came streaming in. Some wore slings, some walked with crutches, some, their eyes bandaged, were led by nurses. Some had no arm or no leg, and what shocked me most was a man on a stretcher who had no arms or legs. I pulled Mother's kimono sleeve, wanting her to look. She said she couldn't. Her heart ached. Suddenly, I began to feel nervous. I don't want to dance, I whispered. My lips were dry from seeing all those wounded. Are you nervous about making mistakes? Mother asked. I shook my head. A soldier out there has no arms or legs. That is why you are here, to give them a little happiness. The stiff, high-ranking officers marched in and took side seats. The doctors and nurses took their seats. Major Ryu stood on the stage and announced that the gifted children of this town had come to give a performance. The program began. Between the performances of other children singing and playing the koto, I danced. I was the littlest in the whole group, so when I came on the stage and bowed, there were yells. How old are you? Do you still wear diapers? Everyone burst out laughing, and even serious Mr. Fukui was on the stage ready to sing with the shamisen so that I could begin, put his hand over his mouth. I felt better and decided to dance my very best to make them all happy. But I was glad when it was over and hungry. I wanted to go home. I was taking my tabi, or socks, off when Major Ryu hurried in. Would we, he begged, come and see some badly wounded soldiers. We connected speakers to the rooms, he said, but it would be very nice if you could show yourselves in costume. We made the rounds. Ko was sweet to everyone, shaking hands and wishing a speedy recovery. Aren't you scared to touch the wounded soldiers, I whispered. No, she said, they fought for our country. I didn't see any rooms ahead, so I thought we could go home. But one more, said the doctor. He is a very difficult patient. He refuses to eat. His recovery would be much faster if he would eat and let us treat him. I don't want to, I said. It makes me feel too sad. I know, said the doctor, but please, one more. The card on the door said Corporal Matsumura. I was told to knock, and I knocked timidly, but it took considerable persuasion from the doctor before a weak voice said, come in. What I saw chilled me. Corporal Matsumura's entire head and face were bandaged heavily. There were holes for ears, mouth, and the tip of his nose. His eyes were covered. He looked like a mummy. The doctor explained that we had just performed. He introduced Mother and Ko. And this is Miss Yoko. She is a very little girl. I wanted to say good day, but my mouth was trembling. I bowed. Miss Yoko bowed to you, Corporal, said the doctor. The corporal brought his right arm from under the sheet. His arms were bandaged, but not his hands. I did not want to shake hands with him, but Ko put my hand in his. His soft, warm, huge hand fingered mine. How old are you? I'm almost 12, sir. So tiny, this hand, like a miniature maple leaf, he murmured. There was silence. I felt very uncomfortable. Then gently, the corporal's hand moved up my shoulder and touched my forehead. He found a small scar. Where did you get this? I fought with boys, sir. I could almost see a smile. Did you win? No, sir. The smile seemed a little broader. Now his fingers examined the material of my costume. He touched my obi, the sash. What a beautiful costume you are wearing, he said. I wish I could have seen you dance in this costume. I did not know what to say. You take dance lessons, he asked. Twice a week, I told him. When these doctors release me, may I come and see you dance? Mother nodded at me, and I said, yes, please. Then he asked me about my name. There are lots of characters for Yoko. How do you write your Yoko? Ko poked me, and her lips said, answer. "My name, Yoko, means to protect or to embrace, sir." "That is a difficult character," he said. "Will you show me how to write your name when I visit you?" This time, Mother and Ko were both nodding. "Please," I said. Then Ko, Mother, and Mr. Fukui wished the corporal a speedy recovery, and we left, to my great relief. How could I know this man was to be important in my life? A few weeks later, in May, we were having dinner, and I had been complaining about the cooked carrots and tofu that we had had for 3 days straight. Not only rice, but vegetables and fish were rationed, and Mother added oats, barley, or vegetables when she cooked rice. Every time she was able to get fish, she cooked it, dried it, and packed it in our emergency kits. Although I did not like rice cooked with oats or barley, I ate that, but plain carrots. "Don't complain, little one," Hideo scolded me. "You should be glad there's food on your plate." "I don't like carrots, cooked or uncooked." "Stupid one, someday you'll wish you had these." And he reached over with his chopsticks and picked up all the carrots. Someone called, "Good evening." "Yes, right away," Mother replied. I was surprised when she returned with Corporal Matsumura. By chance, he had come on the day of my dancing lesson. He was wearing a hospital gown of white canvas-like material in kimono style, and his face was uncovered. It was disfigured, and the scars looked fresh and painful. He ate the supper that Mother brought to him on a small vermilion lacquered table, and he drank the tea Ko poured. "You've made a fantastic recovery, Corporal," Hideo told him. Hideo was acting the role of father. "Meeting your sisters made me want to get well," the corporal said. Mr. Fukui came and turned our shamisen. I bowed deeply to him and began my lesson, doing my very best this time for our special guest. Corporal Matsumura visited often, and we grew to like him very much. We relaxed when he came and listened with interest to what he told us of his hometown in Japan. He was knowledgeable in classical poetry and had translated many poems into modern Japanese. Summer warmed the night air, but the city hall ordered us to drape all windows with dark and heavy cloth so that enemy planes could not spot the least light. Ko helped Mother make drapes. She was good at sewing and taught me how to make simple night clothes as consolation gifts for battlefield soldiers. I made two of the garments. When I wrapped them, I slipped a letter in the pocket that gave all the news of our town and ended with, "When you happen to invade a village, please do not kill or beat women, children, and aged." When I wrote the last sentence, I thought of the mean army police who had recently come and automatically put my hand over my side. Now, day after day, we heard the air raid siren. If we were at home, we rushed to the shelter, grabbing our emergency bags. If the air raid came while we were laboring outside, we flattened ourselves on the ground. The American bombers always flew in formation. Mr. Enomoto said they looked like B-29s, the same model that had been attacking Tokyo and major cities in the homeland. Every time they flew over, I was scared that this town would also turn to waves of fire and we would be burned to death. And night after night, the alert siren woke us. Because it was dark inside and out, the night air raids seemed more eerie. The night planes flew very low. They shook the whole earth. I could hear bamboo, bent almost double, making cracking noises. Everyone lost sleep, and everyone looked tired the next day. One day, Hideo told Mother he had made a decision, to join Yokeren, the student army. "What?" Ko shouted. Mother opened her mouth and could not close it for several seconds. "Most of my classmates have enlisted," said Hideo, serious for once. "I have decided to go help our country." "You cannot go, Hideo," Mother told him. "You must talk with Father. You just cannot make such a decision alone." "Mother, I have already sent in my application," said Hideo. "I will take the written and physical examinations." "How could you?" Mother moaned. "Why didn't you tell me?" "I am 18, big enough to make my own decisions." 18 or 19, even 21, doesn't make a difference. Wait until Father comes home." "Not that I am disrespectful to you, Mother, but you don't understand what's going on in the world," said Hideo. "Our country needs young soldiers." Mother became more angry. "This Tojo government attacking Pearl Harbor to start the war was bad enough. Your father disagrees with the Japanese government." Mother's voice began to shake. "The government has been taking away everything we have, peace, love, happiness. I would rather see our country lose the war than lose my husband and son." She burst into tears. Hideo left the room, and Ko quickly cleared the table. I did not know how to comfort Mother, so I left her. Mother and Hideo argued day after day. She wired Father to come home, but he wired back that he was attending an important meeting with other government officials. By now, Mother and Hideo were no longer speaking. Ko decided to do something. She went to Hideo's room, and I went too. "At least you can speak to your mother, honorable brother," said Ko. "Leave me alone," Hideo snapped. "Stupid girls, you don't understand a thing. Go away." "I will not go away until I say my piece," Ko said bluntly. "Then say it and get out." Ko told Hideo that he must not join Yokeren because if Father died, who would look after Mother and his sisters? Who would carry on the family name? "Mother would adopt a son," said Hideo coldly. You may think joining the student army and dying for the country would be glorious and make you a hero, Ko went on. And the government would send Mother a distinguished medal for your courageous death. Do you think Mother would want it? No. There are only old and feeble men in the war zone now, said Hideo. The healthy ones have either killed or wounded. Also, I cannot go to school every day peacefully while my classmates are getting killed. I have thought about this for a long time. Listen, Ko's tone was even more emphatic. Today, while I was laboring at the parade ground, I saw a bunch of half-recovered soldiers in their hospital gowns. They were being trained to carry food in the war zone under simulated fire and bombing. I spotted Corporal Matsumura, all of them looking dragged out. I thought, if our country is gathering up young ones and forcing still wounded soldiers back to the battlefield, well, there is no hope of winning this war. You're wasting your life. She shouted, if you join the army, I disown you as an honorable brother, and I will not speak to you as long as I live. Me too, I yelled, ever. I won't let girls tell me what to do. Now get out, Hideo shouted. But as he banged the door, he called, I'll handle it. A few weeks later, a special delivery letter came from Army headquarters. It was addressed to Father, so Hideo, who was head of the house in Father's absence, should have opened it, but he had gone to the training ground. So Mother opened it. It was the result of Hideo's written and physical tests, and Ko and I gathered around to see what the letter said. Mother's hand shook. Her face was very pale. Her heart thumped. Then her expression changed to relief. What does it say, Mother? Ko asked eagerly. For the first time in many days, Mother really smiled. Look, she showed us the letter. Hideo passed the physical but failed the written test. They say he is not bright enough for Japan's Imperial Army, so they are putting him to work in an ammunition factory 6 days a week in a town 20 miles from here. What do you mean, Honorable Brother is not bright? Ko demanded. We put our heads over the examination papers and closed. Suddenly, Ko burst out laughing. Sure, sure. Honorable Brother is very stupid in the eyes of the examiners. Look at this. Your son deliberately put down the wrong answers. These are questions even our little one can answer. The day came when Hideo had to go to the factory. Mother packed food and clothes in his huge rucksack and told him she had included needles and thread. Hideo put on his heavy boots and his khaki leg wrappers. Well, see you in 6 days, he said. Then in a really serious tone, he told Ko, look after Mother and little one. Ko nodded with a big smile. I smiled too, because I wanted him to work in the factory rather than join the army and get killed. We all walked beyond the bamboo grove to see him off, and the three of us stood there, very still, until he made the turn toward the station. The house seemed empty that night. None of us spoke as we ate supper. Then Mother broke the silence. Father wrote. He asked if our emergency bags were ready. He said even though it's summer, we should take some winter clothes to the shelter with us, just in case we must evacuate. In the dim light, I started my composition homework. I titled the composition, Grandparents. As I wrote, my thoughts drifted, and I wondered when I would meet mine. I looked at the paper, but I could not even read my writing in this light. I gave a deep sigh. When will peace come so we can turn on the lights? I heard the last train pass. It was bedtime. I was so tired, I threw myself down on top of the futon with my clothes on, hoping there would be no air raid to wake me. Suddenly, I was startled awake by someone pounding and calling. Half asleep, I got up. At the front entrance, Mother, holding a candle, was arguing with someone. Ko joined her. Then Ko saw me. It's Corporal Matsumura. He tells us to get out fast. No, Corporal, I cannot leave now, Mother was saying. Hideo won't be back until Saturday. I cannot leave without him. I came as fast as I could to warn you, the corporal told her. The Russians are landing. They will be looking especially for you and your family. They will kill you. Why? Because of your husband's work for Japanese interests in Manchuria. How can I go without my son? Leave a note telling him to meet you at Seoul, at the train station. The corporal spoke hurriedly. A hospital train is evacuating Japanese patients, and they leave at 4 a.m. I arranged with the station master for you to get on. He is my friend. He fumbled in his pocket. This is a note to the station master. Go now. Mother was speechless. Still not fully awake, I sensed something awful was happening. Corporal Matsumura looked at me. In the candlelight, his scarred face turned red and frightening. He took hold of my chin and smiled. Then he touched his lips to my forehead. I will not forget you, he said. And to Mother, I have been assigned to the war zone again. I don't know where. I appreciate your friendship very much. He bowed deeply. Just as he was leaving, I stopped him. I ran to my room and grabbed my calligraphy. Bu un choi kyu. Good luck in war. I rolled it quickly and rushed back. Please take this. The corporal unrolled it, and Mother moved the candle nearer so he could read. Thank you very much. I wish you good luck, too. And he faded into the darkness. Mother, said Ko, you and little one leave. I'll stay behind and wait for Honorable Brother. No, we shall all leave together. Mother was definite now, though her voice shook. You leave a note for Father, Ko, and I will write one for Hideo. Little one, put your winter coat on. What? A winter coat? I was so tired and sleepy that I was in an ugly mood. Obey me, Mother's voice commanded, and fill all our canteens with water. Do you hear me? She had never spoken to me so harshly. I went back to my room. Ko was writing a note to Father in the dim light. I gathered my composition papers and pencils. You have no time for that, Ko screamed at me. Hurry up and fill the canteens. I dragged 6 canteens toward the kitchen. My head was dizzy and I staggered. Ko yanked the canteens from me and rushed to the kitchen pump. I tried to walk towards the entrance to grab my emergency bag, but I seemed to be on a boat on an angry sea. Ko grabbed my hand and pulled me to the entrance where Mother stood, already carrying her large wrapping cloth pack on her back.